Trendstorm.
Welcome back to Trendstorm. Now let's take a look at the ambiguous situation in Syria's Afrin. Conflicting reports have been circulating over the past week, alleging that the Syrian Arab Army, or one of its allied militias, is on the way to Afrin in order to rescue the Kurds from the Turks. The news started streaming in over the weekend that Damascus has supposedly ordered the popular mobilization units to enter the theater of hostilities, which initially seemed to align with what President Assad's chief advisor, Ms. Boutayana Shaban, said during the Valdai Club's conference on Russia's role in the Mideast earlier this week. She asserted that her country will continue to fight against all aggressors and invaders, including Turkey, which was interpreted as lending credence to the reports that Damascus was planning to intervene on behalf of the PYD, YPG, Kurdish Federalist. That, however, triggered fierce warnings from Turkey, with its deputy foreign minister predicting that this move would cause a disaster in the region if Syria goes through with it. These ominous words followed his boss, the actual foreign minister, promising that no one will stop his country in its anti-terrorist campaign against the Syrian Kurdish forces that Ankara considers as indistinguishable from the terrorist-designated PKK. Shortly thereafter, President Putin spoke to his Turkish counterpart, President Erdogan, and the next day, the latter claimed credit for apparently getting Damascus to reconsider its official deployment to Afrin. The Syrian Kurds, however, saw things differently, and one of their sources told Syria Live Maps, as reported by Fort Rus, that they blame Russia for apparently stopping their hope for intervention. This high-stakes situation is terribly ambiguous because of the fog of war that settled over Afrin ever since the commencement of Turkey's Operation Olive Branch last month, which makes the state of affairs extra dangerous because of the real risk that a single miscalculation could spark a state-to-state war between Syria and Turkey, one which might quickly entangle other regional players such as Russia, Iran, and possibly even Israel as well. Whatever the case is behind the curious reports about the SAA or its allied militia's prospective deployment to Afrin, the fact remains that they haven't deterred Turkey from declaring that it will actually accelerate its operation there through increased shelling and the planned encirclement of the city. As the war continues to rage on and peace talks falter, the conflict in Syria seems to have entered an unexpectedly intense phase at one of its most sensitive moments. Folks, what's happening in Syria is changing by the minute, I gotta say. I mean, this is probably one of the most dynamic phases of the war thus far. Now, to begin our conversation today, we're joined by Mr. Ali Syed. He's going to tell us more about this. Ali is a political researcher and analyst based in Belgium. Okay, Ali, from a quick glance at the map, Afrin looks like a non-strategic, forsaken corner of a war-torn Mideast country, but it's fast developing into a flashpoint that might end up sparking a regional war through miscalculation. So, Ali, can you briefly explain to us why this is and the reason that Afrin is so important nowadays?
Afrin is one of the exclusively Kurdish areas in Syria, and up to now has escaped much of the violence that most parts of Syria has been experiencing. It's very close to the Turkish border and the disputed Hatay region, also a possible means to eventually access open waters. It falls under the Russian side of the Division of Anti-ISIS operational space decided upon last year between the US and Russia. The Russian observers actually left the area as Turkish forces and militias headed that way since the YPG in Afrin sided with the US. The reason that it could become a potentially likely flashpoint is that there are way too many agendas involved here and way too many parties. The now 800 to 900 from the last updates, NDF and tribal forces from Nubalan Zara that are there now in Afrin to bolster the Kurdish fighters. There are irregular forces loyal to Damascus and Iran. Iran has substantial influence too. In fact, there's rumors that it's actually an Iranian sanctioned deal. So whilst Russia is favoring the de-escalation of the crisis, Iran, Damascus, Hezbollah are aiming for a military victory, let's say, whilst the US, Turkey, Israel, and certain Gulf countries are more intent on increasing their presence and foothold.
Okay, I got to say, everything you described to me, Ali, it sounds like the situation is very dangerous. I mean, on the one hand, though, I noticed there's kind of a bit of a contradiction here. Because, you know, you spoke about Damascus wanting somewhat of an escalation, but we know Damascus is against the Kurds' Federalist Declaration from 2 years ago, which they say is, you know, anti-constitutional. Though, on the other, as you said, you know, reports have been streaming in that Syria has allowed either its militias or some kind of forces or another to assist the Kurds. I mean, both directly in Afrin and also passively allowing the Kurdish militias to transit through the Syrian Arab Army's liberated territories to fight the Turks there. So, Ali, what's really going on between Damascus and the Kurds, and who's using who for what purposes?
There is a very delicate dance going on right now where the U.S. and the Kurds would like to see a Syrian-Turkish confrontation, whilst at the same time Syria and Iran would like to limit the Turkish presence. The areas under control, especially as Turkey, has only been able to control, I mean, just, let's say, 12 to 15% of Afrin area within the month of its operation Olive Branch. There's not really any guarantee that it will be heading to areas that are under U.S. control, which Damascus actually would not have minded. I suppose Iran and Syria are suspicious of Turkey's motivations. Also, this would not be an issue if Turkey had started its operation targeting the other side of the river that's under U.S. control. I mean, the deal between the Kurds and Afrin and Damascus, sanctioned by Iran, I think it's actually more aimed at bolstering its bargaining powers for the talks in March rather than cause escalation with Turkey. And, I mean, post-ISIS, all parties understand the strategic purpose of cultivating influence with the Kurds. And the U.S. clearly has come out on top in this regard. Damascus has two main options, to eventually rid itself of the main threat now that is a U.S. presence, or either to rely on Russia via Turkey to do it for them. Or to ally itself with the Kurds and convince them to rebel against the U.S. As it stands, what I'm seeing is that they're trying to keep both options open. So I would say the Kurds, which are at the end of the day Syrian citizens and are playing up that role, are the main losers in the end, and are trying to use Damascus against the Turkish threat, and Damascus intends on using them to mitigate the Turkish presence whilst convincing them to turn against the U.S.
Okay, that was a very comprehensive explanation there, Ali, and I like how you mentioned the importance of the Kurds and how all players have strategic reasons for cultivating influence with them. And this draws me to the last question I want to ask you about the influence that Russia has, not only over the Kurds, but also over Damascus, because, you know, when it comes to the Syrian government, they unexpectedly rejected the outcome of the Sochi conference last week by refusing to allow the UN to oversee the creation of a constitutional committee. While the Kurds, as we know, allow 2,000 U.S. troops and 10 bases to be deployed in the areas of northeastern Syria under their control. So, Ali, all in all, do you think that Russia's influence over these two actors will prove to be sufficient in preventing either of them from provoking Turkey and launching an all-out war in the Arab Republic?
First of all, I would preface by saying I really hope that is the case. But I think to properly understand this, we need to zoom out a bit and rewind slightly, as I believe the decrease in cooperation with Russia is a direct result of the agreement reached between Russia and the U.S. to divide the zones of operations and the reneging in the end of the U.S. to pull out its forces, as Russia did after the defeat of ISIS. In fact, the U.S. even played up the deaths of the Russian mercenaries belonging to the Wagner Group, I mean, in a weird fashion to show that there is still Russian boots on the ground in a warped attempt to add another factor why they still need to be in Syria. The Russian plan to get back at the U.S. with the help of the Turks to go after the U.S.'s Kurdish force requires confidence and a lot of patience that, frankly, I think the Iranians and Damascus are running out of. Also, the longer the irregular forces are in Afrin, the more concessions the Kurds there will have to give to the Syrian government. It's a risky strategy for the Kurds. We think they're actually using Damascus while Damascus intends on using them. I mean, the only situation I'm seeing here, frankly, is that Turkey okays the deal between the Syrian government and the Kurds in Afrin, where conditions are met by the Kurds to hand over control to Damascus and disarm, allowing Turkey to save face domestically and maybe even prompt them to head towards the other side of the river or towards Manbij. Syria, I mean, does not really believe Turkey will escalate, what I'm seeing, as it has limited success so far in Afrin dealing with the Kurds without the presence of the PMUs, which, by the way, several thousand more are expected to be heading there in the next week. Yet Turkey still is denying their presence there. I mean, Damascus is not going to pass the opportunity here to regain control of Afrin without the fight, it seems. And obviously, Damascus also believes it has enough leverage with Moscow to be able to act independently. I mean, this may be a serious miscalculation on their part, as Turkey is becoming an increasingly important economic and strategic partner for Russia. But again, I would say the talks in March are the focal point here, and all sides are gearing up to be better able to negotiate. This is actually what we're seeing.
Ali, this was an informative analysis about Afrin, especially the Syrian-Kurdish relationship and how it's evolved since Operation Olive Branch. And I really liked how you told us about the role that Russia can play in preventing a regional war by miscalculation, including as well the risks inherent to this scenario. So thanks a lot for that. Now we're going to switch over and hear what Ms. Serap Balaman has to say. She's a regular on my program, and Serap is a Turkish political commentator. Hi, Serap. Welcome to Trendstorm. All right, Serap. Although the speculated intervention by the Syrian Arab Army or one of its allied militias into Afrin still remains ambiguous right now, it was slammed by President Erdogan's spokesman as black propaganda, and this same government representative mysteriously said that this does not mean that there cannot be any secret and dirty bargaining here. So, Serap, what do you think he meant by that? And what's the true relationship between the Syrian military and the PYD, YPG Kurdish Federalist nowadays?
I thank you very much for asking me this question, Andrew, because this is the part, there is a big part of the history in this question, and that since the beginning of the war, or since the beginning of the Syrian invasion, since 2011, nobody has mentioned it or talked about it. Actually, the historical baggage of the Turkish-Syrian relations was already full of bitter memories, which is the transformation from amity to enemy since the start of the Syrian invasion. Bashar Assad's father, Hafez Assad, had long pursued a tense relationship with Turkey due to his shelter for PKK since very long years. PKK leader Abdullah Öcalan in 1979 ran away from Turkish justice to Syria. Starting from this date, many congress gatherings and training of the PKK were directed directly by Öcalan and high officers of the PKK from the training camps at Syria. Damascus government let the Kurds except their Syrian army service if they participate PKK. In 1998, Turkey threatened to use force against Syria to prevent his support for PKK was serious, which led to deportation of the PKK leader Abdullah Öcalan by Hafez Assad due to Adana Agreement. PKK was provided shelter at northern Syria and started to use Syrian territory freely to organization. The organization gained a new line of movement and acquired a long track that will be enabled to infiltrate to Turkey. The Syria authority let PKK create camps in Lebanon, which was under the control of Syria, and provided political, economic, and logistic support to the organization. Hafez Assad, the father of the current president, tried to weaken the position of Turkey in case of the city of Hatay issue, and the Turkey-Iraq-Syria problem, the Euphrates River, via safeguarding Asala, the terrorist Armenian organization which killed 31 Turkish diplomats and the PKK terrorist organizations. So this was a safe haven for all the terrorist organizations who were killing Turks since years. We are fighting against them, and Syria had been always in the opposite side, that feeding them against us.
Okay, Serap, this is very interesting. This is very interesting from the Turkish perspective, so I'm glad that you provided this crucial backdrop in explaining Ankara's actions. But now I want to move forward towards the state of affairs today, like what we have right now. And some people say that the combination of Turkish threats, Russia's mediation, and Syria getting second thoughts about this whole thing contributed to a moment to calming the situation. But now all that's kind of gone out the window because the crisis has flared up once again. So what can you tell us more about these three variables at play and how they're interacting with one another, and where do you see it all headed?
Oh, yes. But historical facts are different, and today still the Damascus government is backing up PKK. In the recent days, they invited Salih Muslim PKK PYD leader that once being arrested in Syria and was forbidden to entry to country and agreed to let out 700 PKK PYD prisoners. And in many regions of Syria, YPG and the Syrian government forces are working together. We have documentaries about this. Of those sectors and more, you have asked. First of all, Turkish Republic made it strongly clear that nothing will stop them to continue the operation. This is vital importance for us. As far as I understood from the speech of several government spokesmen and army officers, Turkish army will continue whatever the obstacle could present, including the conventional armies. Secondly, yes, Russia's diplomat mediation is always playing a big part, especially between Syria and Turkey, as they do not have any diplomatic relations, no relations at all. Maybe after playing this little anger crisis, Damascus realized in this way they are aligning themselves with the terrorist entities, and there could be a very strong backlash in the international arena. Besides, they must get into consciousness of the huge irony that they will be allies with the USA's backed YPG that makes them allies with the USA. USA wants to build a federal state within Syria. Damascus regime is okay for it then. So why are they fighting if they accepted federal entities in their lands? Today, when we are talking about what's going on in Syria, we can no longer talk about strategy, but only tactics. The events are changing one day to other, and sometimes in a matter of few hours, we can witness changes. Like you have mentioned, the fog of the war is here. Too many false informations, and it's really so hard to sometimes impossible to reach to information, such as Turkish army used chemical gas or killing Kurdish civilians. Let us make it clear that Turkey has no problem with the civilian Kurds, never had. Kurdish minorities had better rights in Turkish Republic than never existed in Syria as well. The fight is against two well-armed and trained so-called Kurdish terrorist organizations. Now, everybody knows that many ISIS fighters or any other terrorist proxy military groups joined the YPG forces. There are many foreign nationalities such as French, British and any other country citizens fighting for YPG ranks. The Kurdish civilians do not show hostility to the Turkish army. The Syrian ethnic group, Kurdish 80% of the population, yet today US-backed YPG is now controlling 30% of the Syrian land with important gas and oil fields, water sources, and agricultural fields. On the top of this, YPG controls 65% of the Turkish-Syrian border. There is no guarantee that they will stop there. With this huge backup, they are forced to occupy all the Turkish-Syrian borderline, establish a federal entity. Now, in Syria, the war likes a mini size of world war. Every major player countries of the world politics are there. USA established 10 bases at the northeast of Syria. Russia has 2 bases. Iran has 3 to 4 bases. And last week, China announced that they will be participating to Syrian war. Israel continues the attacks from the south to Golan Heights. France is in the US-led coalition, participate bombings in the aim of so-called fighting against ISIS. Vatican and Germany has always something to say. Saudi Arabia is participating by backing up terrorist groups. Many new weapons of the military industry complex are being experimenting as well. This situation makes it even harder to achieve a peace agreement. Any of the players here has or could have different agenda.
Okay, Sarah, thank you so much for speaking with us today. I mean, you definitely presented a different perspective on things. I think that our audience is going to find your arguments thought-provoking, if not a bit controversial, but I was very happy that you shared them with us. It's so important to hear what Turkey has to say about this very risky operation in Afrin. Thanks a lot.
Trendstorm.
So folks, if we think back on what both Ali and Sarah share with us today, we can come to the realization that what's happening in Afrin, it truly is changing by the moment. What we might have heard today might be different than what happens tomorrow and might be completely different than what we heard yesterday. So we need to keep our eyes peeled on what's happening, but altogether, it's dangerous. Folks, I'm not one for hyperbole, but I will say, countries are at the risk of a real all-out war now. One that could be launched by miscalculation. Nobody wants it, but it might happen. God forbid. Let's cross our fingers, hope for the best, keep your eyes on the situation, and hope that cooler heads prevail all around. So folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sportnicknews.com or find us on Facebook. Stay with us.